chemicals made by plants to protect them from various things, not just from us. I think in large part is from infections and from ending up getting moldy and from being eaten by insects and probably eaten by other animals, because plants, they don't really have immune systems, and they also can't run away or bite or scratch or kick you if you start to eat them. So what they can do, though, is to produce toxins.
You're listening to the Untaming podcast.
Rewild the Child.
Here is your host, Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Untaming podcast. Today it is the full worm moon here in the Southern Hemisphere. My kids have been having a lot of fun finding the worms in our garden. They went from refusing to touch them to seeing how many they can pick up in less than 24 hours. This is episode 44. I hope you liked the first part of Katrina's interview on salt and traditional fats. This second part is a continuation of that episode, so make sure you listen to that one first. Today we're talking about sugar and anti-nutrients. The next episode to come out on the new waking moon on the 7th of October is one recorded by our guest host Mary Francell with Dr. Helen Ball from the Durham Infancy and Sleep Centre. I'm three quarters of the way through a book called Never in Anger by Jean Briggs. In the early 60s, she spent 17 months living on a remote Arctic shore as the adopted daughter of an Inuit family. I'll read you out a couple of passages that I thought you may also find interesting. It is toward small children that Utku express affection. Most openly, most completely. They are snuffed, cuddled, cooed at, talked to, and played with endlessly. The men as demonstrative as the women. In part, the tenderness felt for small children is a protectiveness born of their smallness and helplessness. In households where there are no small children, young puppies sometimes receive the overflow of this desire to protect and nurture. A pup in such a household may be as lovingly treated as a baby. The Utku have a word for objects that rouse their protective feelings, naklik. It is lovable or pitiable. The word has both connotations, and to be taken care of. This word is not restricted to small children and pups, but is used for anything that one feels a desire to protect. A frostbitten ear, a lone Kapluna woman in the wilderness, a person who is very sick. And the other one. The Utku methods of bringing up their children were, in their own way, highly consistent. Their consistency lay in the nature of the demands themselves, the requirements for maturity. They were always the same: control of emotionality, generosity, helpfulness, honesty, independence. There was never any doubt which aspects of the child's behaviour were reprehensible, and sooner or later the child, with the help of his reason, Ahuma, would take the initiative in bringing himself to conform. There was consistency also in the calmly rational quality of the adult's responses to childish misbehaviour. To me, the adults seemed refreshingly relaxed, though my foreign eye may have misled me. Was it amusement born of tension that was responsible for the secretive smiles exchanged by Ragley's family behind her sulking back? Alack, passively permitting Sarak in her lap to assault her in a tornado of fury because the chewing gum was all gone? Laughed, as did the visitors, at the buffets, screams and bites while she offered her the breast. When Sarak hit at her face with a spoon, she turned her head away, saying calmly, "She has no reason, Ahuma." And when Sarak was finally nursing peacefully, laughter released the audience. Anyway, I'll stop rabbiting on. I just thought that was rather interesting. You can hear more of what Katrina has to say now.
Let's talk about sugar now. Yeah, I'd really like to hear about the effects on health. You know, it's beginning to become common that issues, especially like excessive weight gain, are actually down to our increase in sugar. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, well, I think a big part, maybe not entirely sugar, but yeah, it certainly plays a big role, isn't it? It's not great for your health. Again, it's hard to tease it out because the context of sugar, you know, by and large, when you're having sugar, you don't tend to put sugar on your steaks and stuff like that. You're having sugar in the context of usually wheat and dairy and processed foods and quite often a lot of food additives and things. And all of those sorts of things can be kryptonite for you. So, but yeah, certainly sugar, table sugar itself, and the kind of glucose fructose syrup or high fructose corn syrup, those sorts of things as well. You know, those are other types of sugar, seem to be particularly outstandingly bad for our metabolism and our health. And it's in some part, at least, it's because the type of sugar that table sugar is made out of is a combination of glucose and something called fructose. And fructose seems to be pretty hard to metabolize, and it drains a lot of your energy, your something called ATP, and it can cause all sorts of metabolic issues from that standpoint. But there are probably also some effects that it has on your gut microbes as well. So our microbiome seems to be very important for just our overall health. It's like as important as a separate organ.
Yeah.
But it's easy for our microbiome to become quite unhealthy. So the microbiome is like the combination of microbes, so bacteria, yeasts and fungi, and maybe even viruses that inhabit our intestines, but also live on our skin and live up our noses and in our respiratory tracts and in our ears and everywhere else, all over our surfaces. And our microbiome and our guts are very important, and it's within our small intestines. The microbes in our small intestines are fed on the foods that we eat, with sugar being something that can overfeed certain microbes that can cause a lot of inflammation and can trigger our immune systems, and that can have metabolic effects as well. So it can overfeed microbes that can produce things like alcohols, and people can even have this kind of auto intoxication or brewery syndrome if they, you know, if you're a bit unfortunate, you have a real overgrowth of certain types of yeast in your small intestine. But it can also overfeed certain other, you know, other organisms that can produce other toxins, and those toxins get into your bloodstream and circulate around and impair your mitochondrial and your metabolic health, and that way you can gain weight. And sugar can, you know, you can just overdo it with the amount of empty calories that are placing demands on your body without necessarily having much vitamins, minerals, and other things that you need to convert that energy into something useful and do things with it. So that it can just kind of drain, deplete you of essential nutrients as well. And, you know, like help to contribute to malnutrition that way, as well as the fact that the foods that are sugary and sweet tend to be malnourishing foods overall. And all of those things kind of combine to lead to weight gain.
Now, what is the difference in the intake of sugar from a variety of sources? So, like, you'd have like a cake, or you've got like a whole piece of fruit, or say some bread or pasta, or like your vegetables and your greens. And then there's also like honey and maple syrup. Like, I guess it can seem really overwhelming to be like, well, these are all sugar sources, but some of them are vegetables and they're supposed to be healthy. And yeah, how I guess do you help to spell that out to understand the difference there?
Yeah, and really good question. And again, I think a lot of it depends on the person at the end of the day. Some people seem to get away with with just about anything. Some people are just really hard to kill. They just will eat anything and do anything and smoke whatever they want and drink whatever they want. But if you're not one of those people, so probably the worst culprits for sugars are sugar that you find just on its own. So kind of like free sugar. So that's sugar that you add to recipes yourself, or that you add to your tea or your coffee or your cereal yourself. Sugars that are found in processed foods that you buy in packets, and they're full of lots of very unsavory ingredients. And then even things like fruit juices can be very high in sugar, but they've got a lot of the nutrients in fruit are found. You know, they're removed whenever you extract the juice. Not that a lot of fruits tend to be very high in nutrients because of all of the generations of breeding, which has selected them for, you know, having higher sugar content at the end of the day, or looking more red or whatever, rather than being nutritious and full of nutrients. So when it comes to fruits, it sort of depends a little bit on the person. Some people may be able to get away with some very sweet fruits like grapes and stuff like that, whereas other people won't. But they might be able to get away with fruits that are less sweet, like some of the berries, like blueberries or raspberries or strawberries or something like that. Some people won't even be able to get away with that. So it largely depends on the person. But I guess if there was a hierarchy, you would put things like some of those berry fruits, you know, like as most likely to be able to get away with things like grapes, or some of the tropical fruits, I suppose, are quite sweet and quite sugary. Bananas, they'd be harder to get away with. Fruit juices, then, would be harder again. And then just the pure sugars, like that you would add at the table, and things like the processed sweet foods are right at the worst end of things. I suppose things like honey and maple syrup, they're probably more towards the fruit juice and end of things.
Oh, yeah, so slightly better, but still, yeah.
Yeah. Again, you know, like our ancestors kind of have always loved and gone out of their way to get honey, like the Hadza.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, like in their overall context of their diet and lifestyles, they haven't been exposed to the same levels of toxicity, and their total diets are much better, and their gut microbiomes are healthier probably than most of ours, so they can largely get away with having large amounts of honey. Although their teeth, actually the men who or the Hadza hunter-gatherer men in Tanzania, I think they often have problems with their teeth, with cavities.
Oh,
more than the women. That's, and I think they think that is because they can each put away about a pound of honey in one go, the men are the ones who are going out. Honey, you know, if you're going out and you're getting wild Africanized or wild African honeybees, I think they don't particularly like having their honey stolen. So it's a risky enough endeavor. So I think the men feel very much justified in having most of the honey, and not, you know, when they're
yeah,
out, they're like, oh yeah, no, we just had some but on the way home, and yeah, this is what's left. Here you go.
Now, am I correct in understanding that sugar is an anti-nutrient?
Yeah, so I think it probably is, because it has those effects where it can deplete some of your vitamins and minerals as you're trying to metabolize, as you're trying to make it more safe. So at the same time, it's also a nutrient. So it's one of those kind of like confusing things. I guess the point, you know, the doses. What is it? The dose makes the poison.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and also the individual person. So it's probably both a nutrient and a nutrient, but it's something that you need to be really very careful with, and it can certainly deplete your nutrients. I think probably things like zinc and magnesium and B vitamins and stuff like that. I think sugar can deplete those. So it's something to be very careful with. Yeah.
Mm. So I see we're nearing the end of our time, but could you give us like a basic sort of, or a brief rundown on anti-nutrients, so like the phytates, lectins and oxalates?
I guess a lot of these would tend to be, they would largely be chemicals made by plants to protect them from various things, not just from us. I think in large part is from infections and from ending up getting moldy and from being eaten by insects and probably eaten by other animals, because plants, they don't really have immune systems, and they also can't run away or bite or scratch or kick you if you start to eat them. So what they can do, though, is to produce toxins. And also when it comes to phytates, I think that's also sort of kind of a dual purpose molecule, where it also helps to store some of their nutrients like phosphate and some of the minerals in plants, especially in things like plant seeds. So things like phytates, phytic acid is a chemical that kind of holds phosphate, but it also kind of attracts a lot of other minerals like calcium and magnesium and zinc. And whenever that's present in your gut, those minerals can nearly get lost inside phytate, and they're not available for absorption into your bloodstream. So even if on paper it looks like you have good levels of minerals, calcium, magnesium, zinc, iron, all those sorts of things going in at the top end, they may just go out the bottom end as well if they're bound to phytates. And phytates and lectin can also have some effects by reducing our digestive enzymes as well. So obviously it's very important that we produce digestive enzymes to help us to break down our larger food molecules into smaller ones that we can actually absorb. And things like phytates and lectins can bind on to our enzymes and inhibit them. And that means that absorption, or that the digestion is incomplete, and that affects our absorption. So then obviously it's harder to absorb nutrients, and you can end up with malnutrition from that perspective as well. Oxalates it's kind of an interesting one. So oxalates can be present in our diet, but they can also be made in our gut, and they can be made inside our own bodies. Oxalates are quite nasty acids, or oxalate itself oxalic acid is quite a nasty acid. It can form these crystals that can get into our tissues and can cause a lot of problems with pain, and also affect how cells function as well. So another toxin. And oxalates, they can bind onto minerals as well. So calcium in particular, and magnesium can bind onto oxalates. And again, you know, like a lot of plant foods have varying levels of oxalates. So you've got things like rhubarb and spinach that are really, really, really high in oxalates. And then you've got, you know, like a lot of, obviously, so animal foods would tend to have, you know, pretty much no oxalates in them at all. And then a lot of plant foods will kind of be somewhere in between. So things like sweet potatoes can be reasonably high oxalate, but nothing like rhubarb or spinach. And some of the berries, like I think blueberries, are fairly low oxalate. Grapes and things like that would be low in oxalates. But probably while you can have considerable amounts of oxalates in your diet, having overgrowths of certain fungi in your gut can produce oxalates. So when people have problems with oxalates, quite often they have a lot of times when people have kidney stones, you'll find that the kidney stones are actually made of calcium oxalate. You know, so the oxalates crystallize out in your kidneys into these great big horrible stones, which are agony to pass, I think, and can become quite dangerous for some people as well. And you can measure, you know, like oxalate in people's urine and blood and stuff like that. And quite often, I think you find that when people have high oxalate levels, they have an overgrowth of yeasts like Candida in their guts. And it's the Candida that are overproducing oxalates. But then as well, inside your cells, you can produce oxalates as well as a metabolic process. And I think fructose and sugar in particular is something that drives oxalate production too, and can drive other, you know, production of other acids like uric acid as well. So yeah, so oxalates can be very problematic. They're actually something that I'm kind of starting to try and get people to eat a little bit less of. I used to be like, oh yeah, eat the spinach. Yeah, you know, it's fine, it's green, it's very healthy. And I'm like, oh, actually, that amount of oxalate may not be a good idea. Maybe you don't have as much spinach or rhubarb. And it's interesting because actually, and you'll probably laugh at this, but for the first time in my life, I had some fajos or fajoas. And lovely. They're amazing.
They are, yeah.
But interesting, I think they're quite a high oxalate fruit.
Okay.
And yeah, and then after, you know, like, I only had like one a day, and I think maybe I had about six in total. So that was like five or six days in a row. I might have had two one day. And I could really feel my teeth after a couple of days getting very sensitive. And it's like, oh, I think actually this might be an oxalate issue. So my first time trying them, and I'll have to see again in the future. But yeah,
Is there anything you can do to like negate the negative effects of the oxalates, or like to counteract the anti-nutrient aspect of them?
Yeah, well, they say that having calcium and magnesium and citrate at the same time as you're having meals that have higher oxalates will stop the oxalates from being absorbed, because they'll just kind of like precipitate out. And then when they're in like crystal form, they're just too big to absorb. So that's one thing that people say. They say that making sure that you have enough vitamin B6, possibly especially the P5P form of it. So I guess you could supplement vitamin B6 as well, or at least, you know, get a good B vitamin that has vitamin B6. They say that making sure that your fat digestion is good is adequate, because I think fats can bind to things like calcium and magnesium in your gut and turn them into soaps. I guess that, you know, if you've ever tried making any soap, you make it with lye, and you've got your fats, and you add, and it sort of like turns into soap, and then the calcium and magnesium aren't available to bind onto the oxalate, and that helps the oxalate to be absorbed. So if your fat digestion is better and you don't have fats going right through your gut too far, and if they're being absorbed quite quickly, then that's helpful as well. So if you've got poor fat digestion, you kind of want to take care of that and maybe look into, do you need to be taking taurine or tudka or bitters, or what do you need to be doing there? Yeah, and apart from that, maybe being more aware of where oxalates are in foods and being careful with them and reducing down your intake, particularly if you're quite sensitive to oxalates. But then, yeah, then you can run into problems with oxalate dumping as well, which is also no fun. So if you go very low.
Yeah. All right, well, I will start to wrap this up now. So I'll put links in the show notes to your Food Phoenix website and Facebook page. Is there anywhere else you recommend if people would like to learn more or to get in contact with you?
Those are probably the main ones. I'm not as active on Facebook these days. I do have a Twitter account, which I wander in and out of. Sometimes I just get really annoyed with Twitter. So I'm not as good with Twitter, but I think that's Katrina1. I have an Instagram account that I don't really use very much, just now and again. And I have a LinkedIn account that I neglect as well. So dropping me an email contacting me through the Food Phoenix website or through Facebook. I also have a MeWe. I'm on MeWe as well, so you can check me out in MeWe. And then sometimes I go in there as well. And I think it would probably be nice to move away from Facebook. And so I'm like, oh, we can try and get onto MeWe more and get away from Facebook.
Cool. Well, Katrina, I'm so pleased that we had the opportunity to talk again. I really appreciate you taking the time to share this knowledge with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Emily. I think I rabbited on. I kind of rambled a little bit. Sorry about that.
That's good, because you go really into depth of, I guess, the effects of everything and like understanding the actual processes. So that's what I really appreciate, because I have the super basic grasp of it, but I couldn't actually explain it to anybody else. And so you help with the science aspect.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe they make it more confusing than trying to explain things. But, well, this made sense in my head. But now that I say it out loud.
Okay, so now my final question for you to end on is, if the entire world's knowledge was lost and you could only leave one sentence for future generations, what would it be?
Yeah, so that one's really hard. I think I would tell people that we are hyper carnivores and we're supposed to eat real food.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.